home. I bring you peace. It may be the peace of plenty and content, or the peace of unburied death. The choice is yours. Obey me and live, or disobey and die.
That's right, that's right. You have a finite set of choices. You have a finite set of choices with the Little Saigon Report. It is November the 18th, 2019. It's almost, well, it's just after 9 p.m. actually. The human beings of Little Saigon are gathering up all their coal and wood to build fires for their late evening meal. You can't imagine what happens here now. You can't imagine the monstrous nature of the darkness here in Little Saigon, Seattle. Something's gone awry. The animals look hungry. I saw a squirrel eating dried leaves today. That must be normal. The crows are looking for food. The hawks are looking for food. Everyone's looking for something to eat, but everyone says there's plenty to eat. And we're all really fat, right? Like Uncle Dan. I could stand to lose a couple fucking pounds. What the fuck, people? It's Monday. Holy fuck. What kind of a dark bullshit road did I just go down?
I say love, it is the river that burns within your butt. I say love, it...
Yeah, I have a long ways to go, folks, with this keyboard, with harmony, with melody. If I expect to play Billy Joel's New York State of Mind when the nuclear missiles start flying sometime in February, I have a long ways to go, folks. That's right, I hope to play Billy Joel's New York State of Mind right after they announce that the missiles are coming. I don't know if it'll help anybody, but it might help me. I don't know where I was going with that, folks. How are we feeling tonight? How are we feeling? How are we feeling about the world this evening? I don't know. I'm of a mind at this point in my life to sort of try to find a way to make meaning out of what looks like a toxic bowl of goulash. I want to find a meaningful life, but it's kind of hard, folks. If you were to tell me, find it in your work, I look there. I looked for meaningful work, and that never worked out. I have tried the various ways of escaping, and I'm still working on that approach. But the problem is, escapism costs money. And I don't have any. Nor would I recommend any mutual fund or bond program with the express purpose of funding me, because as lazy as I am, I know that would make zero economic sense. Better to take my body to the dumps off of 405, not too far from Bothell. You know, that's where they're taking the old people now. First topic for the evening is that being an angel of God, would be an incredibly stressful fucking job. Imagine if your immediate supervisor was the most powerful being in the universe. Hey, Phil, yeah, God? Phil, I need you to work on that pulsar. Why, sure, God, I'll work on the pulsar. I'm not quite done with the black holes yet. And that includes Ava Adams. Ha ha ha, she's not born yet, right, God? It's the beginning of time. It's the beginning of time. Hey, Phil, did you finish that pulsar yet? Can you imagine working for God? I mean, directly. I mean, in theory, as a Christian, I work for God. If you are a believer, if you're a Christian, you work for God too. You work for God. You are a soldier of God. If God comes along and says, "Will you help me?" You kind of have to say yes. If God comes along and says, I need a helping hand, buddy. You kind of have to say yes. That's sort of the nature of, you know, God being God. God asks you to do something, you have to do it. Imagine being an angel. That would be so fucking stressful. Okay? You have to work on the pulsars, the black holes, the planets, and all the fucking stars. You have to work on the fucking frogs. Holy fuck, if some animal gets through that God didn't want to get through, like the French bulldog, imagine if you were Phil. On that fucking day, it's like,
yes, yes, who is it?
Hey, God, it's Phil. We got a little problem.
Okay, open the door, come in.
So, God, you know how you put me in charge of, you know, being the gatekeeper of weird animals? Not getting through from the cauldron of creation? You know that job you gave me? You gave me just one job, God. I had just one job. I had to make sure that creatures, the ugly ones, the monstrous ones, already fucked up with the platypus. I promised you I would protect nature from the monstrosities. But then I let the French bulldog through. And now there are millions of them. And despite the fact that they cannot reproduce in any godly way, they continue to expand across the planet. Can you hear the pitter-patter of the French bulldog? Their screams fill up the night with pain. The screams of the French bulldog are a mocking wail in the evening. A mocking nasty scream worse than the klaxon of any ambulance or alarm system. So, yeah, God, I was supposed to prevent this animal from getting through... Whoa, Phil. Tell me, what did you let through? I've been focused on other things, Phil. I gave you just one fucking job, Phil. So yeah, I don't think I'd want to be an angel. I think that angels get romanticized. I think that if you dig deep enough into the literature surrounding angels, they are not romantic figures. They are not, you know, really sexy and cool. Meeting an angel is not like meeting Nicolas Cage. I've said this before, I'll say it again, it's good advice. Even for you fucking atheists. If you meet an angel on the road, if you meet an angel on the road of life, either something really good is about to happen, or something really, really fucking terrible. Because the angels, they don't care about fantasy football. They probably don't care if you win the fucking lottery. They are manifestations of the infinite power of God. And yet they're conscious, they're aware in that sense. I don't know all the features of being an angel, but they're not really autonomous robots. They're beings created by God. In fact, evidence of their free will and their emotionality, you need not look farther than Lucifer. Oh, Lucifer won't like me saying this, but I'm about to say something that's going to really piss off the devil. Never so much a human being will you find. Never will you find such a collection of human weakness. Vanity, pride, hubris, anger, wrath, you name it. Every dark human emotion exists in Lucifer. Lucifer is so much like a fucking human. You ever just think about that? How incredibly flawed an angel you must be to end up in that place. But what that implies logically is that angels are not perfect. They're just powerful. You need to understand that in life, folks, power does not equal intelligence. Power does not equal compassion. Power is only power. It's what you do with it that matters. You can use your power given to you by God. I believe in God. So yeah, I might be sarcastic right now, but I believe in God. You can use the power God gives you to bring light into the world, to free people, to liberate people from their bullshit, which is a real thing. You can use your power to do all sorts of things that may seem ordinary, like starting a business, like becoming a teacher. I didn't say public school teacher. There are many ways you can use your power. You can also use it to harm people. You can use it to create. You can also use it to destroy. That's the fun thing about power. Humans have more power than most of them realize. But I would never want to be an angel. Next topic. Next fucking topic. I hate all these topics. These aren't good topics tonight. The next topic says human history, nice people, shitty choices. Now, I know I've said human history is the history of revenge. And I know I've said human history is the history of power schemes. But maybe it's simpler than that. What if it's just a history of really shitty choices? Even in heroic tales, written by the victors, you can see the tracings, the substrate. You can see the etchings of human failure. Even in the histories written by the victors. If you have discernment, if you're willing to open your mind and really read between the lines, you can find even in the hagiography, which means the historical kind of, you know, propaganda, even in the history of the victors, you can find the truth if you know where to look. History. Nice people, shitty choices. And, you know, it could be that that's just the way it is, folks. I don't know what else to tell you. If you want me to tell you that there's something about the physical world that will always be there, that will never let you down, that there is some piece of wood or rock, that there is some combination of sand and other materials that will create some type of transtemporal concrete that will survive all the eons of time. No such thing exists, folks. It never did. The desire for permanence in the physical realm is an understandable desire. Everybody wants to achieve a kind of permanence because it seems like a stopgap against death. But there's nothing permanent out there, folks, in the physical world. It is all changing all the time. It doesn't mean it's a lie. Often people mistake change for deception. That's not really looking deep enough. The change is not a lie. The change is not a deception. It is simply the truth. In the physical world, things change all the time. Every atom in your body, every cell in your body, even to some extent, even the brain cells, go through a process of change. Molecules are replaced. Your DNA telomeres, you know, basically what? Get worn down. You get old. You die. You decay. Radiation damages your DNA. Eventually, you disappear. That is also human history. But the desire to try to create things that will never disappear is almost one of the most, well, I don't know. The desire to create things that will never go away is a motive for a lot of really, really bad decisions. I mean, think about the 1,000-year Reich or bullshit like that, fucking Hitler. The desire to create some country that will last for 1,000 years sounds like 1,000 years of pain. Sounds like 1,000 years of slavery. Sounds like 1,000 years of death. And I know that death is unavoidable. But is cruelty unavoidable? Next topic, sort of related, maybe it's a crappy topic, pride versus hubris. What's the difference? Because sometimes it's hard to see the difference, and I don't know. Maybe there is no difference. If you looked at the dictionary, excuse me, I'm going to drink a little coffee here. If that's okay with you out there in TV land. I'm going to drink a little coffee, if that's okay with you. Human pride versus hubris. If you don't know what hubris is a, well, more or less a concept from ancient Greek drama. But it is a cultural artifact of the ancient Greeks that, as a word, as a concept, continued to be used throughout time for the simple, obvious fucking reason that that word is meaningful, that it describes things, that it is a concept that has never tired out. Hubris. Now, we all know what pride is. Pride is that sense of accomplishment, right? Hey, I did something. Look at me. It's a bit of an ego trip, if we're honest. Pride, in some small amount, is not narcissistic. But pride always drifts towards that. But pride is probably okay to some extent. You know, taking pride in your work. If it's simply the pride of a job well done, not, hey, look at me, how fantastic I am, but simply the pride of accomplishment. There's nothing wrong with that. And I'm being serious. There are forms of pride that are probably okay. I believe my dad was a proud man. Now, arguably, he might have been a proud man to a fault, but I can't prove that because I didn't live his life. I was an observer. I was his kid. And I was his kid until he died when I was 23. So what I know of my father more or less encompasses about 16 or 17 years of information. Because, hey, when you're under the age of 5, what the fuck do you know about your parents? What the fuck do you know about anything? You don't know shit, really, when you're just 5 years old. But when you become 6... you realize certain truths, that maybe there is no Santa, maybe there is no hope. When you become 10, you start to see things in the night, you start to talk to demons, it's out of sight. But when you turn 12, yeah, I don't know. Folks, next topic, right? But yeah, nice people, shitty choices. Anyways, pride versus hubris. Hubris is more than pride. Hubris is where you get basically trapped in a kind of fatalistic story. And forgive my nature these days as one human trapped inside of a puzzle box to another. I have tended to see things in terms of stories these days. Because I really don't know what the absolute truth is. Other than my belief in God. But if you were to tell me, Dan, you know, Donald Trump is a great guy, or Donald Trump is terrible, all I see is the story. I don't even think he's a real person. Donald Trump is no more real to me than, I don't know, Huckleberry Finn, you know, Batman, Count Dracula. That's about how real I think Donald Trump is. He might be a real person, like if you actually knew him personally, like Stormy Daniels, you might see the inside of, you know, President Trump, but I have no idea how real he is. I have no idea. Hubris is where you get into a narrative, and it is a narrative that is tragic. Hubris is pride taken too far. Hubris, you know, another way of thinking about it, and this is a bit of an idiom, isn't it? So I'm going to give you an idiom, but hubris is when your reach exceeds your grasp. Hubris is when your eyes are too big for your stomach. And you can say, well, Dan, isn't that just excessive confidence? Well, if you take really excessive confidence, and then you add really, really excessive pride, and then you insert this notion of infallibility, then you have hubris. And hubris is one of the reasons why disasters occur. It's like if someone says to you, we just built a ship, a large steel ship. We call it the Titanic after the ancient gods. I mean the Greek gods, because we're all Illuminati here. Yep, it's the Titanic. It's unsinkable. This ship is unsinkable. This ship can never be sunk. Until it is. If you wanted a physical manifestation of hubris, take the Titanic. It is the absolute physical, absolute perfect example of hubris, and it includes the tragedy, the idea that this excessive pride, this excessive confidence, this excessive belief that you cannot fail is one of the reasons why great tragedies occur, great failures. If you look at the last century of American history, and I mean it, just look at the last 100 years and just really think about it. Think about all the great events of the last 100 years. Yeah, there's pride, but there's a lot of fucking hubris. You know, was the building of the atom bomb a manifestation of pride and work? Or was it hubris? And if you want to say, well, the Nazis were building a bomb. If we didn't build the bomb, they would. And listen, I can kind of see that point. Although World War II looks more and more like a manufactured thing the deeper you dig. But yeah, I suppose in the cartoon version of history, which everyone gets these days, if we hadn't built the bomb, the Nazis would have nuked us. I guess, maybe. I truly don't know. I don't know what they would have done. But I can tell you this, when I look at an atom bomb, or better yet, when I look at the damage left behind by setting off about 2,000 nuclear weapons during above-ground testing by the United States and the Soviet Union and other countries, several thousand nukes were set off above ground between 1946 and I believe 1962. Was that the above-ground testing ban year? That's hubris, folks. After you set off the first atom bomb, you kind of get a sense of how horrible it is. If you set off a dozen of them, then you've got a sense of what a dozen of them do. After you've set off your first hydrogen bomb and fucked it up like they did, and nearly killed a lot of people in the Marshall Islands, well, then you'll set off three more. But that's about it. Do you really need to set off 1,000 of these fucking things? Do you really? Do you have to send them up into space and see what they do at 100 miles above the Earth? Well, we did. I would call that hubris. Dane Wigington believes that our government and other governments, or some portion of it, maybe it's secret, who knows, so secret, even presidents and congressmen don't know, but Dane Wigington believes that our government and other governments are involved in a campaign to engineer the climate, to geoengineer, to control the weather. And I cannot truly state one way or the other whether I think he's right or wrong. He strikes me as a sincere man. That's a good thing. Sincerity's good. He strikes me as being earnest, although sincerity probably takes care of being earnest, but he strikes me as earnest as well. He seems like a family guy, a hardworking guy, a decent guy. He seems intelligent too. So I'll listen to Dane Wigington because so far the evidence is he is sincere and intelligent. That doesn't mean he's right. I also think that he does his research. And he's committed to the science. Like, this documentary he's working on, I think he calls it The Dimming or something. It looks like he's trying to fund some legitimate science. So, whatever your feelings are about the truth of geoengineering, I do think the guy is, you know, I think he's a legitimate guy. I don't think he's trying to take advantage of people. But here's what I'll also say. If it is true, if the governments of the world have been fucking with the weather for about 100 years, that is a shitload of hubris, folks. A bungload. And I'd have to agree with Dane Wigington. I'm not so worried about the climate change or the not so much climate change. But humans thinking they can fuck with the weather without consequence? That concerns me. So anyways, we beat the hubris pride thing to death, and maybe we should move on. Next fucking topic, the Jesuits. And Elon Musk. What do they have in common for Dan? Well, Dan, your friend here, Dan in Little Saigon, Dan loves him some Nikola Tesla. Dan is not an expert on Nikola Tesla. But from what Dan knows, Nikola Tesla was a rock-ass, awesome fucking scientific genius. He was an independent thinker. He was not a charlatan. He didn't set out to take advantage of people. From what I know of Nikola Tesla, he was brilliant, he was Serbian. I think he died in, 1942 or 43? I believe it was during World War II. And I also believe that immediately after he died, the FBI came by and basically stole everything from his fucking apartment. I'm sure that's normal. And then there's my other good friend, my true friend. And when I say my true friend, even though right now we're not really talking, it's not his fault. Can't really blame him. It's that free will bullshit he gave us and that ability to see the dark side of every fucking happy day. That genius ability to pour water on any fucking flame. The human spirit. There's my other friend, Jesus. My friend, Jesus. My friend, the Lord in heaven. He is my friend. He looks out for me. He looks out for everybody. What do these things have in common? Well, the Jesuits, also known as the Society of Jesus, were basically like SS shock troops created by the papacy during the period of the Reformation and religious wars to basically fight back and torture people, to go to countries, I should say colonies, other places where the Spanish forces were, and other forces, Portugal, whatever, Portuguese forces, go to the New World, torture indigenous peoples, steal their ancient texts, hide the ancient texts in the Vatican Library. Oh yeah, what happened to all that Mayan shit? My bet is there's a lot of Mayan shit in the Vatican Library. The Society of Jesus, I promise you, Jesus would not believe in any of that bullshit. Jesus did not believe in torture. Jesus did not believe in ripping people off. Jesus did not believe in going to other places and turning people into slaves. That was just not how Jesus rolled. Jesus was a liberator. He didn't just liberate the body, he liberated the mind. He didn't set out to destroy, he set out to create. The Society of Jesus, the Jesuits have been involved in various operations in modern history involving the CIA, involving the Nazis, involving getting lots of Nazi criminals, crooks, and pieces of shit out of Germany at the end of the war. Holy fuck, those fucking Jesuits. Okay, don't get me started on the Jesuits. So the bottom line is, the Jesuits, or I should say the papacy, took the good name of Jesus and attached it to a group of terrible fucking people. And what's really funny is I'm only a few blocks from Seattle University, and pretty much every Catholic university is a Jesuit university. So I've got Jesuits blocks away, and believe me, if I ever meet a Jesuit in the street, I'll tell him, say hi to Lucifer for me. So yeah, I'm not a fan of the Jesuits for lots of fucking reasons. I'm not a fan of the papacy. If you're a Catholic and you're listening to me, here's what I will say. I do believe... I'm going to drink some coffee first. I will say definitively that it is my belief that some Catholics are Christians. I believe that. Just as I believe some Christians are Christians. Lots of people claim to be Christians. I'm not entirely convinced that every person you meet that claims to be a Christian is. In fact, I think that's part of the great deception. So be careful out there. Whether it's a Catholic or not, a lot of people claim to be Christians who are not. And yeah, some Catholics are Christians, but not all. And there is nothing Christian about the papacy, and frankly, I don't think there's anything Jesus about the Jesuits. But they certainly did ruin a good name, almost. And then there's Elon Musk and our good friend Nikola Tesla. Elon Musk, I think he bought Tesla. He didn't create it. And so I'm not going to entirely blame him for this. But that company looks to be a giant pile of shit. That company looks to be a fraud. It looks to be a fraud being kept alive by the feds. I have no idea why. Maybe it's because the illusion of this great tech prosperous economy must be maintained at all cost. If people came to realize that the whole thing was a house of fucking cards, built on lies and unicorn shit, I'm pretty certain that the whole thing would come crashing down. So maybe the reason why Tesla is still alive, I mean the company, and maybe the reason why Elon Musk is not in jail, is because he's protected. Not because people like him, but because they need him. But if you ask me, the Tesla car company will probably be remembered like the DeLorean. But unlike John DeLorean, buying cocaine on TV, Tesla doesn't deserve this. Nikola Tesla did nothing to deserve this. Nikola Tesla changed the world. We don't even know how much he could have changed it. I don't know if I buy into all of the Tesla mythology, but the fact is this. Alternating current is the primary means by which power is transmitted in the world today across power lines. And that's Nikola Tesla. That's not Edison. Edison wanted everything to be DC, which means basically you'd have to live like a mile away, probably, from a power plant. Yeah. nice brown lung. So Nikola Tesla was brilliant, and he not only created technology, it's possible that he created some of the first basic ideas and maybe even designs that led to things like the laser, like mobile phones, microwaves. And it's possible that really, even though Marconi gets the credit, it's probable that Tesla also invented the radio. Another thing too, Tesla believed you could transmit energy through the air. Now, there's truth to that. I mean, this is something that people have been working on for a long time, the idea of broadcasting energy. And there is truth to that. It's not so easy, and it might even be dangerous. So I'm not going to claim that Tesla knew everything, saw everything, or even realized the consequences of all of his ideas. But this is what I will say about Nikola Tesla. He did not deserve this fucking bullshit. Elon Musk. The only thing Elon Musk will be successful at doing in his entire fucking enterprise, and believe me, 5 years from now, you'll fucking understand, assuming any of this matters 5 years from now. But yeah, the only thing Elon Musk succeeded in doing 5 years from now, what people will say, is taking the name of Tesla and running it through the fucking dirt. That's So that's why I connected the Jesuits to our good friend Elon Musk, because yeah, they both suck from my perspective for lots of reasons, but not the least of which, they had the fucking shitty attitude of taking a really good name, a name that meant something, a name that transmitted truth and power and significance. They took really good names and they associated it with bullshit. Okay, next topic. And before we continue, I gotta move some things around. Today, I have to apologize if you're upset by today's broadcast or whatever. Blame me. I take full responsibility, but yeah, obviously I'm responsible. Today's been a weird Monday. I guess I haven't felt too funny or creative. Next topic, post-scarcity. If you don't know what post-scarcity is, and technically the next topic deals with post-scarcity and inflation, but and deflation. But do you know what post-scarcity is? What is post-scarcity? Post-scarcity is the belief that we have reached the point technologically where everything we need, and I said need, not want, everything we need in life, that's food, water, shelter, and clean air, everything we need is available and will cost almost nothing. And the post-scarcity people claim, well, Dan, there's automation, there's artificial intelligence, there are these things called 3D printers, Dan, they're amazing. Have you heard of the Impossible Burger or Impossible? Yeah, they're going to make meat in a laboratory. Thank you. Post-scarcity is the belief that we have reached a point technologically, economically, where everything we need, food, beer, everything, weed, pizza, shelter, everything is almost free. Everything is nearly zero, which means nothing is scarce. We have everything we want. In a post-scarcity world, it would be deflationary. It would be the ultimate, it would be like hyper-deflation. In a post-scarcity world, everything would get so cheap that essentially nothing, you know, essentially you'd need almost nothing to survive. Now, the problem is the post-scarcity world, if you dig into it, is based on robots, a lot of automation and machines, as stated, a lot of technology, and not so many people. So I don't really know what kind of fucking jobs you're gonna have in a post-scarcity world, because by definition, everything costs nothing. How are you going to employ people? Who is going to work? How do you get the money in a post-scarcity world? Now, what the person will come back and say, well, Dan, in a post-scarcity world, it's Star Trek time. It's Star Trek time. Beam me up, Scotty. In a post-scarcity world, just beam me up to the starship. We're gonna go on adventures at the speed of light. In a post-scarcity world. In a post-scarcity world. Inflation is funny because depending upon who you talk to, inflation is either solely about the expansion of the money supply or it's about the price of shit. I personally prefer the price of shit as the definition, or I should say as the basis of any definition of inflation. I know that may sound, you know, grotesque and not very academic, the price of shit. But the bottom line is, back in the 70s, and I was just a little kid, but back in the 70s, when people were worried about inflation, they were worried about how much it costs to survive. So maybe a good way of thinking of inflation is the price of life. The price of life, the price of joy, the price of those things you need to survive. If anybody were to tell me in my adult life there's been no inflation, I would punch them in the fucking face. Everything I've needed to survive in my lifetime has either gone up in price, or in the last 10 years, what was just as likely, gone down in quality. Everything. Either the price went up or the quality went down. But if you were to try to contend to me, Dan, for every buck you earned, you got more value year on year, you're full of shit. So yeah, we've had inflation. Now, have we had honest inflation? No. There's virtually nothing honest about pirate ship America, okay? Nothing. I think we gave up honesty in 1913. When we created the IRS and the Federal Reserve, we pretty much said honesty is not needed. Honesty need not apply. Truth and justice can go to hell. We've got fiat currency, baby. Tell me what truth ever did for you. Fiat's gonna give you a credit card, baby. So if you wanted my good definition of inflation, it is the price of shit. And the shit you need to survive. The food, the water, the shelter. And let's include the air, because that's kind of related to the shelter in the sense of where you can afford to live. Some people have to live in the shadow, essentially, or rather the fallout zone, of coal fire plants. And that means they get mercury and sulfur and acid rain, and maybe they pay less to live there. It probably is cheaper to live in the cloud zone, the downrange, the downwind zone. It's probably cheap to live just downwind to a coal fire plant, if they still exist. It's probably cheap to live next to a nuclear plant. But in general, yeah, when it comes to things you need and want, like healthy food, healthy water, healthy air, and shelter that actually keeps you warm without poisoning you with toxins. Yeah, when it comes to things you actually need, and even the things you want, pretty much there's been inflation. Now you could say, well, Dan, what about the hedonic index? What about the fact that televisions today do all this crazy ass shit? Look at TVs, Dan. TVs are so amazing now. High definition 3D. It's amazing. It's so amazing. You don't account for that. And yeah, the price of TVs, Dan, it's been kind of deflationary. Well, I would argue that we exported our inflation to China as we imported, you know, their shit. Essentially, we exported inflation in the form of really bogus money. And we didn't just do this to China. We did this as part of the whole petrodollar scam, which may be coming to an end soon. Who knows? Yeah, for many years, we exported inflation. Well, guess what, folks? The gig is up. We're probably not going to be able to export inflation anymore. We're probably going to have to consume it at home, which means that even though, yeah, there's been terrible inflation, you ain't seen nothing yet. So if your question is, does Dan expect deflation or inflation? Maybe that's the wrong question. I expect the system to break. It can break in many ways. It could explode. And when I say explode, let me explain that in the context of the U.S. economy. We could end up with such a rush if you know, because right now Trump really does want Jerome Powell to print. He does. He wants to win the election. That's what he says. Now, as you well know, I don't believe any of that's real in any sense, but it's a good story. It's a good narrative. And according to the current narrative, Trump wants to win, and he's going to win, and he wants Powell to print, and Jerome Powell probably will. I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine a central banker that will not eventually shoot their wad. Central bankers are like 13-year-old boys. You know, show them the section of the Sears catalog with the women in the lingerie, and yeah, they'll shoot their wad. I have said in the past that I believe a crack-up boom is coming. Well, I do. And the first stage of a crack-up boom looks like prosperity. It really does. Stage one of any crack-up boom actually looks healthy. The Weimar Republic, at the very beginning of their crack-up boom in the 1920s, the Weimar Republic seemed very prosperous. It seemed like their economy was doing well. Very, very low unemployment. Lots of people, lots of money, lots of working, lots of shit. It seemed perfect. That's always the first stage of a crack-up boom. The second stage is when you get the inflation. And it starts out subtle at first. At first, it's not so bad. But at some point, it gets so bad that people start, you know, buying things early. That's a nice way of putting it. Some people would call that hoarding, but I call it buying things early with money you have today. So let's say you typically drink 5 bottles of wine every month, and that's not so bad. Maybe you'll buy 100 bottles next month, if you have the money. And yeah, everyone starts doing that. Everyone starts spending money believing that the price of every item out there is going to just be more tomorrow. It'll be too expensive. They need to buy today. Buying today means shortages. Shortages or higher prices. That's how the market works, folks. If you flood any economy with a lot of make-believe money, the bad value will chase after the good value. I don't know if that's called Gresham's Law. It might not be called that, but there is a generally accepted principle in finance and economics that bad money ends up displacing value and chasing after it. And that's really what's happened in the last 10 years. With all the printed money, what's really happened is that bad money basically stole assets, property, wealth from most of the world, most of America. The final stage of a crack-up boom is the part where everything just basically falls apart. And here's the thing, folks. If you think that our economy contains slack, and slack meaning excess slack in the line, it really, really doesn't. There is no slack. The whole thing is very tight. It is tight by design. In fact, it's tight because it's intended to be efficient, okay? So it has to be tight. It has to be even a little bit fragile because it's supposed to be so efficient. You get your products delivered when they're needed. You don't keep a lot on hand, whether it's food, whether it's technology, whether it's anything. Whether it's a generator, as I've mentioned in the past, whether it's a backup generator for a nuclear power plant. It's not like you keep 100 of them. You probably don't even have that many on hand within the driving distance of your typical boiling water nuclear reactor in the U.S. You feeling me here? So the final stage of the crack-up boom, if and when it happens, who knows how catastrophic it is? It will be a failure of the delivery of food and resources. You tell me what that does to a society. And I'll add this too. We may have already been through the crack-up, which means the only thing left to happen is the boom. And it's possible that Jerome Powell, Fed chairman, he knows this. He knows that the next little dose of monetary debasement will be the last little dose of rat poison to kill the guest. To kill the friendly guest at the toxic bed and breakfast. Hey, would you like a little more tea, Miss Mupplewipe? What's that in my tea? Oh, it's a little special ingredient. It tastes bitter. Ignore the taste, Miss Mupplewipe. This is Uncle Dan's Bed and Breakfast of Love. Jerome Powell probably knows on some level that the next little dose of quantitative easing is going to kill the patient. He probably knows that. He knows that the crack-up part, yeah, Obama got to eat that part of the pizza. If there was a crack-up part of the pizza, that's the piece that Obama got. It was the nice, juicy part of the monetary printing party, la-la-palooza, blah-blah-blah. Congratulations, President Obama. You got the juiciest part of the shitburger. But there's still shitburger left, folks. And Trump gets the part that's not so tasty. I do not believe in post-scarcity. I really, really don't. I don't know what to tell you. If you believe in post-scarcity, maybe you can send me an email and tell me why. But the basic assumption of post-scarcity is that we will reach a point with our population where our needs will become free. And my question is, at what number of people? Before I go, before I end this podcast, what is the magic number? Is it 8 billion? Can you have post-scarcity with 8 billion people? I don't know how that works, folks. It's like saying you can have a billion people in Texas or a million Bengal tigers in India. You kind of have to not understand anything about nature to believe that bullshit. So what's the magic number? Is it 8 billion? I don't know. I kind of think the number's smaller than that. If you want to have the magical post-scarcity world where you can have everything you want for free, it's probably not going to be 8 billion people. And it's probably not going to have a growth rate, which means there's going to be some magic number, and that number will be fixed. And now I'm beginning to envision Logan's Run. Logan's Run, where everybody dies at 30. Why? Well, there's only so much shit to go around if you want post-scarcity. I mean, think about it. If you've ever seen the movie Logan's Run, I mean, they just go around enjoying themselves. It's a lot like the fucking Eloy in the Dime Machine. Just go around having fun, having sex, doing drugs, hanging out. Until you're 30 years old. Post-scarcity is bullshit, folks. The squirrels outside my window know it. The crows that can't find food right now know it. The garbage that piles up in our streets knows it. Post-scarcity is total fucking bullshit. It's the kind of crap you tell people when you realize that the opposite is probably true. In fact, it's another one of these ironic facts. Post-scarcity is an ironic fact because it is so much bullshit and is the opposite that is the case. Probably by Christmas, food prices in this country are going to double. And it will be difficult for them to hide that. If not by Christmas, within the next few months, I'm convinced of it. And that will be the opening salvo of a series of increases in the cost of food. And I'll tell you this too, they'll try to cover it up like they always do by decreasing the quality of the food and the quantity of the food. And for those of us who are overweight, good news, you don't have to go on a diet, but you also don't get to mock Venezuela any longer. Because good old food in the USA, it's about to get a lot more scarce and a lot more poisonous. If you enjoy my podcast, A, and B, you have resources, and C, there is no one in your life that needs your help, and you've taken care of everything you need to take care of. And D, yeah. But if you enjoy the podcast, then feel free to donate. I will include a Venmo link. Even though I'm not happy about this podcast, this was not one of my better ones. And I really do apologize. But if you want to donate money, I'll put a Venmo link in the description. The same Venmo link on my SoundCloud homepage. And you can donate. If you have the money. You don't have to donate every month. You don't even have to donate at all. But if you want to, you can. Your money will be used to fund trips to Antarctica. Your money will be used to build a starship called the Excelsior. Your money will be used to build a robot version of myself that I will upload my brain into, armed with all sorts of missiles and machine guns. Your money will allow me to replace my right hand with a glowing fist of titanium. So please donate. And good night.